Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. And we're back here doing another of the season preview podcast. And today's podcast, we're going to be talking about the Denver Nuggets. And to talk everything Denver Nuggets, I'm joined by Chris Towers of CBS Sports. Chris, how are you going?
How's it going?
I'm going all right. How's your day been?
Busy. Got a lot going on over here.
As always,
beyond fantasy basketball, even.
Beyond, okay. So you're just everything in life is going full steam ahead for you.
Oh yeah.
Well, we're gonna take some time out of your busy schedule, and I thank you for taking some time out of your schedule to talk some Denver Nuggets and to talk fantasy basketball. Before we do that, Chris, where can everybody find you on Twitter?
C Tower CBS, where I tweet entirely too much about all manner of sports, but a lot of basketball there.
So head across and follow Chris if you aren't already. Follow him on Twitter and engage in some conversations. Chris does not only fantasy basketball, he does fantasy baseball and fantasy football as well. So if you are playing those other sports, you can speak with Chris about those over on Twitter. Now, Chris, the Denver Nuggets are a team that were quite frankly a mess last season. There was a lot of organizational dysfunction. A lot of that stemmed from my man Brian Shaw. He's thankfully gone and replaced by Mike Malone. And I think that's a significant upgrade. And that's probably the biggest move they made this offseason, even including the trade of Ty Lawson. I think there's pretty much no doubt they got worse this offseason, but I would say that they got better by getting worse, if that makes any sense. How do you see what they did this offseason?
They're an interesting team because they're, like you said, they're clearly worse. They're clearly going to lose more games than they did. Well, I'm actually not even sure if that's true because they might get a full season of the Danilo Gallinari that we saw in the second half last year and in Eurobasket, and that could be huge for them.
But MVP Danilo Gallinari?
Yeah. Yeah. I love the Rooster. I think he's an awesome player. I think he's him in this Euro tournament has been so much fun. But you would think they're going to be a team that wins in the low 30s. I thought they might improve last year, and it was such a disaster, especially when Melvin Hunt took over, they were close to a 500 team.
A lot better.
They could flirt with 500, but losing Ty Lawson is going to make them a worse team, but probably a better fantasy team than they were last year.
Well, the thing that I like about what they did in terms of, and even the loss of Lawson, we know that he had his legal troubles, is that last season when Hunt took over, everybody got better with the exception of Lawson. Like, Fareed started playing better. Gallinari went crazy. Gallinari started putting up numbers like he was a top five player in the league. Fareed got better. Everybody started, like Will Barton suddenly became a player. All these guys out of nowhere started putting up numbers, except Ty Lawson, he regressed. He's gone, and they're replaced by Emmanuel Mudiay, who is going to be, I don't know what he's going to be, but I'm really excited to see what he's going to be. So there's a chance that they are better than last year because of this new, and we know what Mike Malone did in Sacramento. He was great until he was ridiculously fired at the start of the season, and he got a lot out of his guys. Like, we saw how good DeMarcus Cousins was. No one on this team is as talented as DeMarcus Cousins, but we could see a leap from Fareed. We could see Yusuf Nurkic take a massive jump. I think that they could be a team that gets better, but doesn't get better because of where they are in the West, because they're relying on younger players and a new system. But overall for them, it's better moving forward.
As long as he doesn't let Danilo Gallinari get sick, because apparently that's his biggest weakness as a coach, if you trust the King's judgment.
That's a fireable offense. Maybe he's one of those he's anti-vaccination or something like that. And there was something happening with Cousins, and
how dare he let DeMarcus Cousins get sick?
Yeah, how did he let him contract a serious viral meningitis disease that left someone bedridden and caused them to lose about 20 pounds? It's all on Mike Malone.
I can't believe the Kings got worse when DeMarcus Cousins wasn't playing. Mike Malone's a bum.
Yeah, he's terrible. I actually can't wait to see what they do with this team. Now, in terms of guys that they brought in, excluding the draft choices, it's not much to look at. Joey Dorsey, Kostas Papanikolaou, Nick Johnson, they all came across in the trade for Ty Lawson. Ty Lawson obviously left, and none of these guys are going to have any sort of role. I like Nick Johnson. I think he's a decent guy as a backup guard. Papanikolaou showed stretches last season in Houston as a decent guy who plays plays the four, a really good passing guy, a guy who can hit some threes. And you know, there's their big men aren't great shooters. Kenneth Faried's not a great shooter. Yusuf Nurkic is a good shooter. Darrell Arthur struggles. So Papanikolaou might have a little bit of a role there. We heard rumors that they were going to release him, but they haven't. So he's going to be interesting, but it's all for deeper league fantasy stuff or if an injury occurs. Let's talk.
Yeah, young absolutely. Guys, they didn't really, outside of the draft, this is a team that they're trying to build through the draft and especially with international guys. You know, Moutier doesn't count for that, but they've brought in a number of international guys that could make a difference for them.
Definitely. We're going to talk about a couple of those guys now. We're going to talk about some of these young kids. And we look at guys for Dynasty League purposes, the guys who have been drafted in the last couple of seasons. And there's a big chunk of guys. So we've mentioned Moutier. I've mentioned Yusuf Nurkic. Nick Johnson, who was drafted in the second round last year. Gary Harris, who was their first round draft pick, who was quite a disappointment last year. But we don't know what we're going to get to see from him. But one of the big international guys that we need to touch on is Nikola Jokic, who is a second round draft choice last year, came across this year. And I think he can be a very, very good player. Now, he's probably going to be behind Nurkic, I would say almost definitely. But as a backup big man, he is likely to be their number two center. And I think there's a lot of value in him in a dynasty league. For people who might not know anything about him, I think he's going to be a very good NBA player sooner rather than later.
And the interesting thing to keep in mind, he's only 20.
Yeah,
he's
definitely.
He's really young. But more importantly, I think, Nurkic had knee surgery.
That's
and,
true.
You know, he's expected to be back by the start of the season, but even if he is, that dude fouled constantly. He was really good last season, but there's going to be a limit on how much he can play if he can't get his fouls under control. Because he averaged 6.8 personal fouls per 36 minutes. That's something that you would expect to go down for a big man, but it's not a guarantee, and it does put a ceiling on how many minutes he can play. I wouldn't be surprised if he only averages 26, 27 minutes per game. Nurkic, that is.
Yeah, I've got Nurkic currently at 25 minutes a game for that exact reason. Is he would go out there and put up, you know, stupidly high block numbers, great steal numbers, big rebound numbers, and then he'd sit after 15 minutes. And a lot of that was Brian Shaw just being stupid with his rotations. And there'd be times where Nurkic would go out and have a double-double in the first half, and then he wouldn't play him at all for the second half, even though he was on two fouls. So there was limits. There was coaching limits, but Nurkic also would go out there and get four fouls in the first 5 minutes, and then you wouldn't see him again. It's a trend for big men to do that, and it's also a trend for big men to improve that significantly through their second and third seasons. But you're right. There's going to be times when Nurkic goes out there and has to play 20, 23 minutes because Nurkic is sitting on the bench. And just the fact that I keep saying Nurkic and Jokic together, there's going to be people who get confused with those
names.
That's
going to be really confusing.
If you say it fast, there's not a big difference. Maybe it's my accent, but they do sound quite... They do sound quite similar, but look, I was at Summer League and I saw Jokic out there, and he's a very big man. He, for 20 years old, he is just gigantic, and I think he's going to be a real contributor. And they're going to be in a situation, Denver, where they're going to have two really good centers, young centers on their team. And it might be a situation similar to like Orlando when they had Marcin Gortat and Dwight Howard, two starting caliber centers that they couldn't get enough minutes for, and they had to trade one of them to get some. Get some assets, and that might be the case that one of these guys has to get traded, or there is a possibility that Jokic can play next to Nurkic. He's not a great three-point shooter, but he can actually hit three-point shots, which is something Fareed can't do, and I'm not sold on Fareed being a good player or a great player or anything like that. So
I don't know if the Nuggets are either.
No, I'm sure they're not.
And that is one thing they can play together. Jokic... He shot 34.6% from three-point range last season, which was a big improvement, 4.3 attempts per game. So if he can step out, even if he doesn't play with Nurkic, just because they might be a little too big, a little too slow to play together in today's NBA, he just gives them another look that they don't have from Nurkic or Fareed. Some of their other small ball fours can shoot, but you know that's another potential look that they might get that they didn't have before.
Definitely. They play Gallinari at the four, and then it's all over in terms of shooting, because that's a completely different situation. But if they're going to go traditional and go big men, he is, out of that group of guys that they've got there, Joffrey Laverne, Nurkic, Fareed, and they put Jokic out there, he's probably the biggest or the best shooter out of that group. I want to talk Gary Harris, he was disappointing last year. He had like one highlight dunk, and that's about all that we got to say for his season last year. I don't see a big role for him really appearing this year. I think that Randy Foy will still be the starter at the two. They got Will Barton, who they brought across in the Aaron Aflalo trade, who was actually a lot better than Aaron Aflalo when he came across. I don't see a pathway for minutes for Harris this year. Do you see him overtaking Barton or overtaking Foy and getting himself into a decent role, or is he just going to be destined to ride the pine for one more year?
I would guess he's still... Well, yeah, I think he's probably third in that. Foy can play a little bit of point guard, but you probably prefer him off the ball. And Barton was really impressive last season, and that's something we'll have to talk about. Maybe not right now, but a little later, just because he might be a potential answer for them as a shooting guard. He's 25, he's athletic, or he turns 25 in January. But I also, there was a little looter and a riot stench to what he did last season. Because it was a lot of like crashing the boards, you know, just putting up big numbers in a system that was very free flowing. And I don't know if he can do that with more structure. So there might be minutes for Harris if he shows that he can shoot like he did his freshman year at Michigan State when he was above 40% from three. He tailed off after and was just miserable all around last season. But if he can show that he's a reliable 3-point shooter, that's something that this team really does need.
Yeah, definitely. Foy is a good 3-point shooter, but he's not the future of this team. He's going to be a nice player for the next couple of years. He's a bit older, and he's a good 3-point shooter. He can get, you know, as a shooting guard eligible player, you know, he's probably going to get you close to 3 assists a game. He's going to be a good free throw shooter as well. He's okay at steals, but he's not all that exciting. Barton, you're right. It was a situation where he's just getting minutes on a really bad team. But even he tailed off towards the end of last season. Like his last couple of weeks, he was averaging only 8 points in 20 minutes. He wasn't getting those 25 to 30 minutes. It is a different coach, so we don't know how they're going to run him. But I'm not convinced that Barton is going to be a great option there. So Harris does have the opportunity to outplay Barton in preseason. And even you know, by midway through the season, overtake Foy. I'm not convinced that he's ever going to be a great fantasy guy, so I'm not investing a huge amount in him in Dynasty League, so I just don't know if he's ever going to be a guy that does more than shoot threes, and I don't know if he's going to ever get those peripheral stats, if he's going to get any assists or rebounds or steals or anything like that. I think he's going to be a guy that you stream in. Hey, Gary Harris is starting, I might get 2 threes out of him, and that's probably about it. I don't really see much more from him. What about Emmanuel Mudiay? How much do you like him?
I think he has a pretty good shot to be the fantasy rookie of the year. Because you compare him to Jahlil Okafor, who's got real red flags as far as free throw shooting, as far as his defense, as far as whether him and Noel can play together. You look at Karl-Anthony Towns. I don't think he's going to play more than 20 minutes a game. So
20.
Moody's got a...
You're even more pessimistic than me. I'm like maybe 24. But 20, yeah, it's definitely a case. There's so many guys there in Minnesota.
A lot of guys and a lot of foul trouble for him in college. And it's not going to get any easier for him playing NBA, NBA minutes, NBA speed against NBA players. So I think Mudiay, you know, the big thing for Mudiay is he's played against grown men.
Yep.
Now, most of them were like Meta World Peace or, you know, guys like that, guys that probably aren't good enough for the NBA anymore, but there's still a physical nature to playing against guys who are 24, 25, guys that have already gone through college rather than, you know, being an 18-year-old who's playing as a freshman at what? He was going to go to TCU?
SMU.
He was going to go to SMU, yeah. So, like, I think that could serve him better. Even if he only played, 10 or 11 games because of injuries?
Yep, but he was really good in those 10 or 11 games. But you're right, that exposure to a professional environment and the fact that he had to go over there into a foreign country, not speak the language, not know anyone over there and live shows resilience as well. To me, that he's not going to be overawed by the experience. He's going to have a sense of professionalism. The thing I worry about him is that his shoot, like we talk about Okafor's free throw shooting, Mudiay's free throw shooting is probably just a bit better. Not hugely, but he also can't shoot from the field as well. So we're talking about a guy who might struggle to crack 40% from the field. He's going to struggle to get over 60% from the free throw line. So your percentages are going to be dead. He's going to play good minutes. There's no doubt about that, but that means that more volume on those shots, and that's going to affect that. He's going to turn the ball over, and he's not going to hit any threes. So if all those things are fine for your fantasy team, that's great. He's probably going to get, you know, 3 rebounds, 6.5 assists, 12 to 14 points a game. And he'll get you over a steal, but you're gonna lack in those other categories. So look, those other things could come up, but who knows?
The big question for him is, we have an idea of what he could be.
Yep.
But the big question is, how good can he be right now? Because you look at another guy who came in the league, he couldn't shoot. He was an athletic freak. He was a great passer and a great pick and roll guy. John Wall shot 41% from the field as a rookie. But he put up huge numbers because he just got to go out there, run an offense full time. I don't think Moutier is that good, and I don't think I'm going out on a limb by saying that. But no. You know, there's a template for a hyper athletic point guard who struggles with shooting to put up good numbers in a fast paced offense where he has the ball constantly.
Yeah, look, definitely. And I'm going to talk about him a little bit later on in terms of, well, actually, we'll talk about now his average draft position at the moment. I'm just going to bring up my sheet. He's sitting at 95. Now, I've got him projected outside the top 100 for guys, but I've got no problem taking him around that 95 to 100 mark, because if he hits, he could be a top 60 to 70 guy. If those counting stats, he could, if he averages 15 points and goes 4 rebounds and 7 assists, they're great numbers. But if those things don't come up and then the percentages kill you as well, it's going to be a problem, and you have to be ready to accept those big negatives with drafting Emmanuel Moutier.
I think he might be also someone who has a little more value in a head-to-head points league.
No,
where
I agree with that.
The volume is what you're caring about, the volume and especially the assists, because I think he could be a really special pick and roll player, both as a scorer and a passer. And if he gets that opportunity on this team, they've got some guys who can be weapons in both the pick and pop and pick and roll. If he gets, if he develops a chemistry with Kenneth Faried and those guys start running pick and roll, Nurkic is huge as an option near the rim. Or if he's, you know, finding Danilo Gallinari or Wilson Chandler, there is talent around here. There's guys who know how to play, and he could have a good opportunity there.
He looked dominant in summer league as well, and his passing was at a level that people weren't expecting. All the people that I spoke to when I was there were like, you know, you've got to make sure you see Emmanuel Moutier. He's on a different level than we anticipated. His passing and his vision is something that we weren't expecting at this level. And you're right, now he's going to be surrounded by guys who can shoot, guys who can jump, you know, Faried, Gallinari, those sort of guys who can be athletic and get to the rim or can hit the open shot. And that's going to, with his speed and his athleticism, he's going to draw people into him when he drives as well. Kickouts to Gallinari, kickouts to Chandler, kickouts to Foy, kickouts to Harris. There's going to be a lot of guys around here who can start to shoot. And, and especially if he's showing this, you know, supreme athleticism and a danger in getting to the rim, it's going to be interesting for Emmanuel Moutier. So I think he is going to be a pretty decent rookie, but there are going to be drawbacks with him. And in a points league, he's probably, I'd say he's almost definitely the number one guy, maybe Okafor in a points league as well, because you're not worrying about the efficiency, but both the efficiency numbers for Moutier are an issue. So if you're eliminating both of those, then he rises significantly.
Yeah, and I have him, I did my keeper rankings on CBSSports.com last week or 2 weeks ago. I have him 33rd overall, which I think could be low, but then I look at the guys that I have above him. I have Jahlil Okafor at 32, Hassan Whiteside 31, Victor Oladipo 30. It's hard for me to put him above those guys. Okafor, it's hard for me to put him up above there just because Okafor is going to be a center. It's harder to find those guys than point guards. So, you know, there's a lot of potential here. And he could be a really good point guard. But then you think about the fact that a really good point guard is valuable, but there's 20 of them.
Yeah, that's right.
For fantasy.
Yep.
So, and I have some concerns about playing time a little bit on this team. I think he's going to get a lot of it, but it wouldn't shock me if Jameer Nelson started.
Okay. No, I would be shocked if that happened, but Nelson was really good when he came across in the second half of last season, but I think he's going to be a guy who plays, say, 25 minutes off the, or 22 minutes off the bench, that sort of range, and he might cut into Moutier's playing time. I think they're still going to want to give Moutier a big chunk of things. We've heard some words from Mike Malone that they want to ride him and they want to really get involved with him in terms of making it his team to run. So I think that they will start. Yeah. But Nelson's not a non-factor. He is a factor there, and he is going to get at least 20 minutes. I'd be pretty sure that he would get around that sort of mark. And he'll be in deeper fantasy leagues. Jimmy Nelson's going to have value because not many guys that sit around that late in the draft are going to get 4 assists a game, which is something that he can do.
Yeah.
Let's talk.
Yeah, and the three-point shooting, and he's a good enough shooter that you could play him and Moutier together as well.
Oh, look, your defense would probably suffer, but Moutier's a big guy, so he can take some twos and guard those guys. Whereas you're right, Nelson's shooting could be a real asset for this team. His 3-point shooting. This is another guy who can hit some threes and help Moutier out in terms of what he's able to do with kickouts. Let's talk.
And I also think defense is going to be an issue no matter what lineup this team runs.
No, that's true. There's no shutdown guy in the big man department on the wing. There's no one who's so they could be in a lot of 130, 128 type of games with the way that they're likely to run, unless Mike Malone pulls something out of his bag of tricks. It's unlikely they're going to be able to shut teams down.
Yeah,
let's talk our breakout players, Chris. So a guy that we want to look at who goes from being a good player to a great player, or from being an irrelevant player to a decent sort of role player, or any way you want to look at it. Who do you think is ready or primed for a breakout?
Well, I guess, does Gallinari count? If not, Nurkic is the pretty easy call.
I think that both of those guys sort of count in that area, but I agree with Nurkic. He's the one who I had as for my answer. I think he's going to be fantastic if he stays on the court.
Yeah, I did my breakouts column, my first edition of breakouts last week, and Nurkic was in my categories of the guys who could turn from fantasy reserves to starters. In the 14 games where he played at least 25 minutes last season, he averaged 11 points, 9.6 rebounds, and 2 combined blocks of steals. And that was only in 28.1 minutes on average. So there's potential here for him to have a big impact on both sides of the floor for fantasy. Efficiency is a concern. He took a lot of bad shots last season. And I think that's partially him being super young. He's a really, I think, is he even 21 yet? He just turned 21 two weeks ago.
He's 21, yep.
He didn't play a lot of minutes. Brian Shaw probably posted him up more than he should have as a rookie, but he was able to bully his way to the free throw line a lot when he was going well. He only shot 44%, which is pretty bad for a center, but I think in a better offense where he's maybe asked to create less on his own, I think there's really big breakout potential here.
Yeah, look, even if you look at his per 36 numbers for last year, 14 points, 12.5 rebounds. But the thing that I really like, and you mentioned it before, 1.7 steals and 2.2 blocks per 36. Yep. He's a guy that, as a big man, and this is hard to get, he can be, he's going to be over a steal and a block and a half sort of guy. That's amazing. And we're going to be approaching 8 to 9 rebounds a game as well. The scoring won't be there. It's no threes. The passing's terrible. The percentages might be bad. But we're talking elite blocks. Well, not quite elite, but big block, great steals, good rebounds. And that's, for where you're able to get him in drafts, it's going to be a bargain, because he's currently being drafted at pick 140, and that is way, way too low.
He could be a poor man's Rudy Gobert in terms of the ability to fill up categories that are very valuable, because you don't get a lot of them. Blocks, if you get a block and a half per game, that's 120 over the course of the season. Most teams aren't going to have more than 400 or 500 from their entire roster over the course of the season, if that. So that's a real, 1.5 blocks doesn't sound like that much, but that could be a difference maker for your team.
No, it's huge. Like, your team only needs to average 1 block a game, or less than 1 block a game, to really be right up there in terms of winning that category each week. And I wouldn't be shocked. This is probably going a bit far, but if he averaged 10 points, 10 rebounds, 1.5 steals, 2 blocks, it's the ceiling, but it's not crazy to think that he could do that. If he got, say, 28 to 30 minutes, he could legitimately do that. And those numbers are superb. They're approaching sort of Nerlens Noel defensive numbers with steals and blocks. And I think that's it's under, there's not many big men who get steals. Like Noel's one of them. DeMarcus Cousins is another one of them, but not many other big men get steals at that sort of rate at over one a game and throwing the blocks and throwing his attitude as well. He's just, he's really fun to watch.
He's a delight. He's a crazy person and it's great to watch. It's so much fun.
It's
just
it's
like
awesome.
him blocking someone and then yelling at them in I don't even know what language he would speak from Bosnia, but
I'm just
yelling
say
at
Bosnian.
People. Probably. I don't know. But just yelling at people in foreign languages and just like, you know, he's going to be a guy. I think he could be a guy that gets himself tossed out of a handful more games than you want if you were relying on him as a starting fantasy option. But I think he's a top 55 keeper. He fell just outside of my top 50. And there's huge upside both this year and moving forward.
Yeah, once he gets the playing time under control with the fouls, it's going to be the numbers are going to start to rise significantly. And so he's being picked at pick 140. I think that he's a guy that's right on the cusp of the top 100 this year. So I think that's significant value. But let's talk to the next one when we talk about sleepers, Chris. In terms of guys who are going to really exceed the average draft position, you brought up Danilo Gallinari. He's got an average draft position of 121 at the moment, and that is
that's crazy. It's out of control.
It is that like he is pushing the top 50. You mentioned Eurobasket. He is just destroying Eurobasket at the moment.
another guy with a lot of swag.
No.
He is fun.
He is
fun when he gets going.
He is awesome. Now look, let's go back to what he did at the end of last season. Because even if you look at his last five games of last season, which is what we remember most recently from his play, he averaged 25 points a game. He hit 3.5 threes a game. He had 6 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal, over half a block. He hit 89% of his free throws, 58% of his field goal attempts, 53% of his three-pointers. Now, he's not going to shoot those percentages, considering that the last three seasons before this one, he was at 42, 41, and 41 from the field. But he got red hot, and he's still shooting at that sort of level in Eurobasket. He is almost without doubt the best player on this team. And to pick pick him outside the top 100 is ludicrous. If for some reason you're in a league where people aren't listening to this podcast or aren't reading your stuff, Chris, or aren't actually clued in, and they leave him to, you know, even if he's still sitting there at pick 80, it's a massive bargain, let alone leaving him to pick 120. Yahoo's going to have to change their ranks or something, because those numbers are out of control. Look, you can't leave him to that long. He is, yeah, there's a bit of an injury risk with him, and a lot of his value comes from threes, but
yeah,
he's scoring the percentages. He started getting assists towards the end of last season. Like 3 assists from a small 40 is a really good number, and he's just a really, really good player. I don't know what to say about him.
In 27 games that he started, 17.6 points, 4.5 rebounds, 1.9 assists, more than a steal per game, almost a half a block per game, a bunch of threes. He started getting to the free throw line. He started driving more towards the end of the season. And that's what you wanted to see, because he really did look miserable early in the season. He shot below 40% for the first 4 months of the season. We're really basing all of this on March and April.
Yep.
When they got back to playing a little more free, a little more open offensively, not trying to, you know, dump it into the post with Kenneth Faried. But it's just when he started getting back to full health, because remember, he also, I'm pretty sure he had meniscus surgery in December and January.
Yep, that's right.
And it seemed like a situation where it was just going to be, we're never going to see Danilo Gallinari again. So the fact that we got peak Danilo Gallinari, and he was, averaging, well over 5 free throws per game for the last month and a half of the season. So I think there's a lot of upside here.
Now, while you were talking, I've dug up his Eurobasket stats. This is through 5 games. He's averaging 21 points. He's doing it on 64% field goal shooting. He's shooting 44% from 3 and 90% from the line on 10 attempts a game. He's averaging 7.5 rebounds and 2.5 assists. Like he's flat out dominating over there. That's only in 30 minutes as well. He's flat out dominating over there. He is going to be. Look, let's hope that his knees hold up. I'm not too concerned, but he has been injury prone throughout his career, not necessarily just with the knees, with other injuries as well. Let's hope he holds up, but he is going to be really fun to watch, and he is the best player on this team, and there's going to be a lot to like about him. What about guys who are the other way around, Chris? Guys who are overvalued heading into fantasy drafts?
I could see an argument for Wilson Chandler, because he's a little bit redundant with Danilo Gallinari, though they did give him an extension this offseason, and they seem to like him. So those guys are kind of interchangeable. They'll both play the three and the four, and they're kind of positionless. And Moutier could be. Moutier definitely could get overdrafted.
There's a risk with him, definitely.
Yeah. Because he's not at all a safe guy. Like, when you look at the rookies, I think he's got maybe not more upside than Towns, but for fantasy, I think he's got more upside than Jahlil Okafor. Yeah, I also think Jahlil Okafor is a lot more projectable. You can look at Jahlil Okafor and say, I know what he's going to do. Emmanuel Moutier, what's so enticing about him is he's a little bit of a blank slate because we've never seen him play in college. We haven't been super exposed to his game. And so you can dream on Emmanuel Moutier, but the truth is that most rookies aren't that good. You know, we saw that last season for sure. And so it's really rare that you even have an Andrew Wiggins type rookie. And Andrew Wiggins for fantasy was just kind of okay.
Yeah, he wasn't good. He didn't finish inside the top 100 for the season, Wiggins. He had stretches where he was good, but he just wasn't because, he'd play big minutes and he played lots of game, like every game, but he was a scoring guy and he didn't hit threes. He didn't get many steals, rebounds, assists. His free throw percentage was okay, but he wasn't a great fantasy guy, Andrew Wiggins, and he was great on the court and good highlights and all that sort of stuff, but you don't see fantasy rookies in the top 100. We've had two guys in the top 100 the last 2 years, and that's it.
In fairness, the last 2 years, I think, have been a little bit of an outlier. There haven't been... 2 years ago was widely considered just a pretty bad draft. We've had a lot of injuries the last couple of seasons to rookies as well. Julius Randle was a guy that could have been a top 100 guy. Aaron Gordon had the ability, if not the opportunity, once he broke his foot. So I think these rookie classes could get better, but I think it's also illustrative of the fact that most rookies aren't good, and we kind of forget that.
I had a look, Chris, at the last 9 seasons in terms of rookies and their rankings. In the last 9 seasons, 3 rookies finish in the top 50. And those guys were Steph Curry, Anthony Davis, and Kyrie Irving.
Lillard didn't make it, huh?
No, he finished at like 53 or something like that.
Okay.
In the top 100, we had an average of 2.1 guys in the top 100 over the last 9 years. And we had 5.3 guys inside the top 150. Where if you look at the current Yahoo ADPs for rookies, there's 13 guys being drafted inside the top 150, yet on average, 5 of them will finish there. So that gives you an idea of what a big discrepancy. Look, and it's fine to take a risk on some of these guys, but some of the guys being drafted, it's just not going to happen for them. They're not good players. They're not going to contribute. They're not going to get minutes. They're going to be eased in, and they're just not going to produce that sort of fantasy value. Moutier might be a bit different, but he's still, in general, rookies tend to go 10, 20 spots before they should because people don't know, and he's even in a situation where we don't know even more about him, where people go, oh, he could be great. Let's take a chance on him. Whereas the odds are probably heavily stacked, then he won't be great. But there is a chance, and people love that. It's like a glass half full perspective.
It's kind of like, why pick, Tony Roten, 87th overall, when you could maybe pick Emmanuel Moutier and get Tony Roten? Like, that's the thing, is that once you start adding up the actual potential of it, you think Emmanuel Moutier's got so much potential, but there's a lot of point guards out there.
Yep.
And a lot of guys that can put up 15 and 6. And so when you look at him and he's this blank slate, he's this physical, physically impressive presence, but then you start to actually add up the chances of him actually becoming this, it's not great.
No, the odds are stacked against him to becoming a top 100 sort of player. And to get him, yep. you're probably going to have to snatch him in the top 100. So you've got to weigh up that risk. The guy that I reckon is probably going to be a bit overrated, and it's a lot to do with the point you brought up before, is Kenneth Faried. He's currently being drafted at 59. I've got him outside the top 70 at the moment. And I think it's because of the extension from Wilson Chan, the extension from Danilo Gallinari. They're going to have to play some four of those guys. They're going to have to play, you know, next to each other. They're going to play, you know, Chandler can sort of play the two, but not really. They're going to have to play Chandler and Gallinari at the three and the four. Faried is too small to play center. He's not defensive enough. He gets you no rim protection or anything like that. Faried basically, from a fantasy point of view, is points and he's rebounds, and he's not a lot else. He's not going to get a block a game. He's not going to get a steal a game. He's not a good free throw shooter. He's a high field goal percentage guy, and they're the categories that he excels in. And picking at pick 59, I think you're not going to be massively disappointed there, but there's no upside, I don't think, in picking him at pick 59. I don't think he's ever going to become a top 40 player with what he's able to do. And you know, he's been limited in minutes the last two seasons. And I think that they're going to do that with Chandler and Gallinari to cut into him as well.
On the other hand, in 30 minutes per game last April, 19 points, 11 rebounds, only three blocks in seven games. That's bad, but he shot, 61% from the 57% from the field. And so he shows these flashes.
That's
where
true.
You think, man, if he can put this together for a full season. But that's what we've been saying each of the last, every season he's been in the league. Yeah. It feels like he's never put together one really good season. It's always been, well, his coach doesn't trust him. He has to earn his coach's trust. And he's had to do this every single season. And it's three different coaches now, but it's not like, you know, George Karl just trusted him throughout the entire season. There were ebbs and flows in that, and it was the same with Brian Shaw. I think Brian Shaw just actively didn't like Kenneth Faried.
I think that's pretty right.
As a player, and I think that was unfair. On that team, with the guys that were playing, like, J.J. Hickson's not better than Kenneth Faried. Whatever you think of Kenneth Faried, some of the guys that were playing last year are clearly not better than Kenneth Faried.
Darrell Arthur's not better than Kenneth Faried.
Yeah, you know, he can do some different things, but Kenneth Faried has been, I think, unfairly inconsistent with the minutes that he's gotten, but it's also, it's hard to be too upset about it because he kind of brings that on himself. He's inconsistent in his own productivity and I think at times his effort level.
Yeah, look, we hear him as, he's a big energy guy, but it doesn't, if you're going to, so not market yourself, but put yourself out there as a big energy guy, you got to bring it all the time. You have to be that big energy guy. If you slack it off, everything is going to drop because that's what your game is built on.
And he does it. He's got energy and effort on every possession. It's just on half the court.
Yeah.
And I think that's been the biggest thing. And with Mike Malone's kind of a defensive guy. And so if Kenneth Faried continues to prove himself to be a defensive liability, because I think the physical attributes are there. He's athletic. He's undersized for a power forward. But with the way the league is going, a 6'8 power forward with his kind of athleticism, there's no reason he can't follow stretch fours around the floor. There's no reason he couldn't guard Ryan Anderson. It's just he's not the synapses don't seem to be connecting, you know, the ability's there, but it's never actually happened for him. And I think at this point it's fair to question whether it will. And so that puts a ceiling on how much he's going to play.
Yeah, definitely. I think it 30 minutes is where he's sort of been capped. I think he'll probably be in that situation again because there are guys like Jokic and Chandler and Gallinari going to play there. Joffrey LeVern's going to have to get some minutes. For some reason, they're going to still give minutes to J.J. Hickson, which he's not good either. But you know, J.J. Hickson's not far off from Kenneth Faried in terms of what he produces. His points, his rebounds, and that's it. And that's basically what Faried is. But you're right, he was good at the end of last season under Melvin Hunt. His numbers were able to increase. But my point mainly is that if you're picking him at pick 59, how much better than pick 59 value is he going to return? Is he going to be a top 50 guy? Is he going to be a top 40 guy? I would say probably not. Whereas you get Gallinari 60 picks later, like, please, like, it's a no-brainer.
I mean, I think you'd rather have Gallinari in a vacuum.
Yep.
Even acknowledging the injury risk. So the fact that he's coming 30 picks later, let alone 60, yep. I think that makes you happy about him.
Yeah, like I'm not a Fareed hater, but there's a lot that you've seen, and you get the feeling that the Nuggets don't necessarily love him as a player. They don't necessarily love him as a person as well. There's been reports mm-hmm. of friction with him and teammates and coaching staff yeah. and management and all that sort of stuff. And some of that, you know, if they're not a good team, some of that goes into, well, we don't need you to play. You can just sit down because you're being a real dick about things. And I think some of that comes into it as well. And that's, yeah, it's all these factors that you got to consider when looking at these guys and how much is he going to play? How much of an impact is he going to make when they do have other options? So if something's not working out well, they can go with other guys.
And the two things he brings to the table in a Roto or a categories league are the two easiest things to find.
Yeah. You can find rebounds from anyone. Look, you can go and grab so many guys late that are going to get you 6, 7, 8 rebounds. Look, they're probably not going to have the upside of Fareed where he can go out there and get an 18 rebound night, but he's not going to average 18 rebounds. He's going to be a 9 rebound guy. You can cycle through guys and stream through guys to get those sort of numbers. And he doesn't provide any real rare stats. And he's not a shooter or anything like that. So he's not going to ever have a night where he gets red hot and, you know, he goes out and scores 30. He's an interesting player because, yeah, people do love seeing those big rebound numbers, and that bumps him up in people's estimations, I think. Now let's talk about Chris. Let's talk about guys who are limited by what their playing time is. Now you could probably put Fareed in this situation that if they were unleashed and they were able to get big minutes, you'd really want to look at them from a fantasy point of view. Is there anyone where you look at that, say, an injury occurs and then they get thrust into a bigger role that they're going to become really fantasy relevant?
I don't necessarily think so. I could look at Hixon, and if he, ugh, we've seen if he gets 30 minutes, he puts up numbers.
Yeah, that's
true. He's terrible. Like, he's an actively bad player. I think he's one of those guys that, like, actively hurts you when he's on the floor.
Yep.
But he can put up big fantasy numbers. He can get blocks. He can shoot a good percentage. So if Fareed went down and they needed 28 minutes a game from J.J. Hixon for some reason, that would be a guy that could be like a handcuff, but beyond that, I don't necessarily feel that great about a lot of the guys on the teams on the lower end of the team's depth chart.
The guy that I had mentioned was Jokic, who we talked about earlier. If he was able to get into a situation of starting, he does provide some weird stats for a big man where he can hit the threes. He's an aggressive rebounder. Steals and blocks are okay. But Jameer Nelson, if something was to happen to Moutier and he becomes the starter, there's no one else who's playing point guard. Like, Eric Green is not a factor. Jameer Nelson goes out there. He's not as good as he used to be, but 12.6 assists, 2 threes is something that's definitely within reach if he got himself up to 30 minutes in a situation where Moutier was out, and you'd have to be all over grabbing him. Or if a situation where Gallinari got injured, I think you'd see a lot more from Will Barton. He would move. He would play. He could play some three at a stretch as well. So I think that his minutes would go up, and he'd be a 25-minute-a-night guy. And we saw that when he got the minutes last year, the stats were able to sort of come after that. So he's another guy that I'd want to keep an eye on. I don't want to be looking at him in any standard drafts at this point.
Yeah.
But they're guys you've got to keep an eye on, because there are some people that no matter the minutes they get, they do nothing. And I'm looking at you, Kirk Heinrich, that you get 30 minutes and they go out there with 2 points and 1 assist. But there are some guys that when they're given the opportunity, they're going to go through the roof. And that's what you really want to – you want to know who these guys are, so that when something happens, you get an alert on your phone or whatever, Moutier's down, quick, let's go and add Jameer Nelson, because he's going to be able to provide those numbers and people are going to be rushing all over him. Much like we saw with Mo Williams last year when Ricky Rubio went down and Mo Williams went – he went 2006 Mo Williams. He just went crazy because he was
Terrence
given that
Ross,
opportunity.
Oh, Terrence Ross is disappointed that you used Kirk Heinrich as that example.
But I don't think Kirk Heinrich's ever scored 51 in a game. That's why I went with Heinrich.
That's true.
Like, that's Ross true. Ross has got it. And I use this a lot, Chris. I say, if we've seen someone do it, it means he's capable of doing it. He might not ever do it again. But
Corey Brewer is capable of being the best scorer in Minnesota Timberwolves history.
He's done it. Kirk Heinrich has never done it. He's never gone out there and had a Kirk Heinrich game where he's dropped 50. Terrence Ross will never do it again, but there's still that 1% chance where you go, you know what? If he gets hot and hits 10 threes, something could go right. Yeah, Corey Brewer could go out there and get 50 points and get 6 steals because we've seen him do it again. In all likelihood, he's going to go 8 points and 2 rebounds. But Kirk Heinrich is just, he's never done it. He's, yeah. It's even like, well, a guy like last year, Ronnie Price would start for the Lakers. He'd have 0 points, 2 assists and a steal in 32 minutes. Like, how can you play?
The Lakers were the worst last season.
They were pretty cool. No, they weren't pretty, and Byron Scott is still coaching. So there's that.
Yeah. You can't feel great about that.
No, because look, I understand that you dealt bad talent and you got bad pieces on your roster, but don't make bad decisions to compound it. Like, don't even bad decisions. Don't make horrible decisions to compound it.
The most amazing thing for me was Jeremy Lin played decently well.
He did.
In the first month of the season. He got benched. They benched him basically through the trade deadline. And then, like, 3 days after the trade deadline, I think they put him back in the starting lineup after Jordan Clarkson had emerged as this, like, really awesome fantasy option. It was they were the worst last year. I hated them.
It made what they did made no sense. Because, okay, you start Lin and you go, okay, well, they're going to bench him. Let's put in the rookie who we know they've got high hopes. Nah, let's keep him in the D-League. Let's put Ronnie Price, a guy that couldn't get minutes at the Magic, who were at that point worse than the Lakers, had been out of the league for a year. Let's bring a guy off the street, put him into the lineup, play him 30 minutes, and let's get nothing out of him. And now they're bringing back Meta World Peace. For what benefit? I've got absolutely no idea. I don't know what they're trying to do. What benefit he's going to, a guy that's been out of the league for 2 years and struggled the last time that he was in the league. I don't know what benefit he is going to provide to this team. Just run the kids out there.
It's fun. It's going to be real fun.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be fantastic to watch Kobe and Artest out there on the court. And who knows? Look,
like you said, they've won titles together before. They could do it again.
Yeah. Unless he's bringing a time machine back from China, I think we're pretty safe from them winning a title this year. But you never know. Things can happen. I think the only player we haven't really talked about on this team is Joffrey Laverne. I don't really see him having... I'm a fan of Joffrey Laverne. I just don't see him having much of an impact this season. What about Darrell Arthur? Okay, let's talk about the backup big men. Darrell Arthur, JJ Hicks, and Nikola Jokic. Who is going to get the most minutes out of those guys?
So say them again.
Nikola Jokic, JJ Hicks, and Darrell Arthur, and we'll throw in Joffrey Laverne as well.
I guess Arthur will, just because I'm pretty sure, and I don't know if Mike Malone's going to do this, but I'm pretty sure Arthur was playing, was spending time at the three last year as well. So the fact that he can kind of spot at multiple positions, I guess, helps him, but I don't. It's a pretty underwhelming group, especially if we're talking fantasy. The only guy, if Jokic comes in and he's ready, there are enough questions about Nurkic's playing time that he could be someone that could make an impact. But beyond that, it's pretty uninspiring.
This is what Darrell Arthur's numbers were last year. Per 36 minutes, he averaged 6 rebounds as a power forward. That is horrible. He couldn't even get to a block a game as a power forward in 36 minutes either. And he couldn't even get to a three a game. So as a guy who's, ostensibly a guy who can step out and hit 3-pointers, he hit them at 24%. He just couldn't do anything. But he was getting minutes over Kenneth Reed. So well done, Brian Shaw.
Yeah, not great. The Brian Shaw experience was a pretty unqualified disaster.
It was humorous, though, to read back and see some of the videos of him, like, rapping the pregame speech and things like that. It's very, very humorous to watch that and just hear the stories come out about him buying those books, how to relate to millennials and all that sort of stuff. It's very, very humorous, and you can see him doing it.
He does seem to have been right about Ty Lawson.
That's true.
So that's a point in Brian Shaw's favor, I guess.
That is true. So maybe I take back all the things I said, Brian. Maybe you're not a horrible coach, but now you are. Who's your favorite player on this team, Chris?
Gallo. Gallo is secretly, not so secretly because I tweeted it out the other day, one of my favorite players in the league to watch when he's going well. The other day I was watching the highlights from his 47-point game against the Mavericks last April. He had 47 points on 23 shots in that game. He was hitting everything. He's a guy that has just – I hate to rely on stereotypes, but, like, he just plays with, like, a a swagger that you think of from like a European soccer player.
Yep.
More than like he's so confident, he's so creative, he's so inventive as a player. And he's a really underrated dunker. His Knicks days were super fun in that regard. Yep. And there's also a behind the back pass from like 3 years ago to Kenneth Faried on the baseline. Just go look it up on YouTube. It's impossible. This I don't even know how you think to make this pass. He's like running along the baseline, dribbling with his right hand, and he throws it behind his back, and it's impossible. The space he fits it into, he's such a clever player. I love watching Danilo Gallinari play.
I'm going to have to look that up because I don't recall seeing that. He's also got a top three nickname in the NBA as well. The rooster's fantastic. And you know what's good about it? You can also tweet it out using emojis with the rooster picture as well. So that's another point in his favor.
As someone who writes about fantasy baseball, though, there's been some confusion because there's a big-time prospect for the Texas Rangers named Joey Gallo.
Oh.
And so every time, because I've got a lot of people who follow me for basketball, but then I've got some baseball and football guys. And so every time I'm like, just referring to Gallo. Like, Gallo's got, you know, huge potential, but the strikeouts are an issue, and people just be like, wait, hold on. I lost you back there. He strikes out? What are you talking about? So there's some confusion there.
You need to use the rooster emoji.
Yeah, I need to, like, lobby Twitter to just give me, like, three extra characters, and I can just put, like, NBA, NFL, or MLB before whatever tweet I'm going to make.
Oh, that'd be handy.
Yeah.
My favorite guy is Nurkic for many reasons that we mentioned before. The aggression, it's humorous to watch him out there. And I think he can develop into something really. I'm a massive fan of Gallinari. I'm probably going to be a fan of Mudiay, but Nurkic at the moment, he's just fun to watch. I just love guys getting out there, getting in people's faces, but not being, you know, he's aggressive about it, but he's not aggressive in a negative way. He's aggressive in a fun way.
He's not trying to hurt people.
No.
He's like the opposite of Andrew Bynum, where Andrew Bynum was just like kind of lethargic and didn't really seem. He was just aloof, but he would also just be dirty sometimes. Whereas like,
oh, he's not dirty.
I've never seen that.
Yeah, he's not dirty. He's like, he's gonna get in your face and he's gonna, you know, he'll do that and he'll show up what he did. And if, you know, if something goes against him, he'll laugh it off. Like, he's doing it because it's, you know, part of the game and it's all in fun. He's not doing it to be like aggressive. I'm going to meet you outside the team bus later on or anything like that. But, you know, if someone hit him, I could imagine him doing that.
He's like Whiteside, except we've never seen him elbow someone in the back of the head.
That play from Whiteside on the Linux last year was the most, like, it made it was, no sense. Like, what do you do? Okay, the fact that he didn't get suspended for like double digit games is ridiculous to me. He just charged him down.
That was the one where you see, like, oh yeah, that's why.
Yep.
That's why. That's the kind of decision making that gets you out of the league after 200 minutes.
Like, it wasn't even in play. It wasn't like they were, you know, jostling under the boards and he threw an elbow back. It's like he just ran from the top of the key. Chased him down and just charged at him, elbow in the back of the head, and just kept going like nothing had happened. Like, at least make it subtle. Like, you know, do a Ron Artest on James Harden elbow in the head. Yeah, that's more subtle than what Whiteside did. And it was just like, you've got literally no idea that there are people watching you, because there is no way you could have disguised that for anything apart from just being dirty. And it was horrible. But Nurkic is not like that.
No.
What about your favorite player all time on this team, Chris?
You know, for me, when I think of the Nuggets, I more identify them by teams. So, like, that team that won 57 games a couple years ago is one of my favorite NBA teams ever. I loved watching that team. But, like, I, as far as historically on this franchise, there's not that many guys that I really love. I was never a Carmelo guy.
Iverson.
Yeah, I was never, I don't know. I like Iverson, but those teams were fun. Those teams with Iverson and Anthony, watching those two try to coexist and actually finding some pretty good success with it for a while. And then you had a young Nene around those teams. Like, those teams were fun, but that's the thing with this Nuggets team is I think of teams. I think of the team that was the first 8 seed to knock off a number 1 seed, stuff like that.
Yep. The guy that I'm going to throw out there as my favorite all-time Nugget is Dikembe Mutombo. He only played there for five seasons. Yes, the Hall of Fame. Has that actually happened yet, the Hall of Fame?
Tonight.
That's tonight. Okay. He was fantastic. For start off, they had those great uniforms, which they've tried to bring back, but they haven't done it. They haven't done it quite as well as what they should have. There's not enough rainbow in the uniforms for a start.
Yeah.
And he was just a shot blocking animal. You go through his numbers. You know, he had a couple of seasons of over 4 block shots a game. He had a stretch of 6 seasons where he blocked at least 3.4 shots a game. Yeah. And those sort of numbers. Nobody blocks 3 shots a game these days when he's doing 4, 4.5.
The 90s were weird in that regard because you had a lot of guys blocking 4 shots per game. I think Alonzo Mourning did it.
Robinson.
David Robinson would do it. Hakeem probably did it.
Yep.
Ewing did it? I can't remember.
Patrick Ewing did it in one season.
Yeah, and Mutombo, but also you've got the eternally awesome finger wag. You've got the I don't know if you've ever seen the video. I was watching it the other day. Of Patrick Ewing making fun of Michael Jordan because he's never dunked on Dikembe. I think they're at the All-Star game or Team USA. And Patrick Ewing was like, yeah, you've gotten me, but you've never gotten Dikembe. And finally, they splice it so Michael dunks on Mutombo, gives him the finger wag. And it's like, that's fun. That's a fun part of Mutombo's legacy, too.
You've also got Who Wants to Sex Mutombo as well.
One of the best NBA stories ever.
Which he claims didn't happen, but then you have other people coming out and counterclaiming that it did happen. So I'm just going to believe that it did happen, and I'm not going to listen to any other conjecture that it didn't.
You want to believe it happened because it makes the world a little more magical. You know,
it adds to his legacy. It should be in his Hall of Fame speech.
It should be on the plaque.
Oh, I'm losing my control here because it's just, if you know what I'm talking about, if you don't know that story, which you should, please go on and look up the Who Wants to Sex Mutombo story because it is fantastic, and it's more fantastic if you just picture it in your head and just try and get the visuals of it happening
and the voice.
it all adds up to a perfect package, Chris. I think we're done here.
I got a train to catch.
You head off and catch that train. But before you do, quickly, let's remind everyone where they can find you on Twitter.
CTowersCBS, at CTowersCBS.
So go ahead and follow Chris over there on Twitter. Thank you for coming on again. It was great to have you back on the show.
Thanks, Josh.
Not a problem. Follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball. You know, the YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, all those sort of places. Subscribe to this podcast and check out the other podcasts heading over onto a Hardwood Paroxysm as well. And check out the other podcasts on their Pod Center. That would be awesome if you could do that. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.